this beautiful little statue. Now, they're both absolutely ebony jet black. And as I asked the salesperson to pull down the small one for me to look at, she said, told me that that is the natural color of the clay. It's from a region of, let's see, I hope I do justice. I just saw the place on the map. Southern Mexico, southern southwestern Mexico, I think, called Oaxaca. And in Oaxaca, they have this naturally occurring black clay. And so it was natural that these black Madonnas were made there, and they're not glazed, they're just baked. They're quite lovely. Now, the one I got, the one I purchased, is, as I say, less than a foot high, and she's triangular. She's just a triangular piece of clay, hollow inside. And the triangle is a cape, which is what she's wearing. And a crown. She's wearing a crown with a cross on top. She holds in a very tiny little hand one single flower, and the detail on this is so, I hate using a word primitive because it sounds, again, very, you know, first world chauvinistic. I would rather call it naive, although primitive in art does mean something a little more positive than primitive when you normally are talking about primitive. But the working on the cape are flowers and whorls, I should say, like a fingerprint, like in Starry Night, the Van Gogh painting, circular spiral things that I guess represent stars or roses or something wonderful. And as I say, she's got one very tiny little hand outside the cape, and in that hand, right hand, whole flower, and I think the flower's like 5 petals. It's just absolutely beautiful. Her face, this is what got to me too. Her face, the eyes are closed, and it looks to me very, very similar to many representations of the Buddha that I have seen in Eastern art. And I absolutely love that because, to me, that represents a commonality of, again, an archetype that someone was representing calmness and tranquility on a Catholic, on a Spanish or a Latin American Catholic statue or icon or whatever this thing is, using almost, maybe unconsciously, the representation of Asian art. And I think that's neat because it kind of shows that Jung and Joseph Campbell and people like that, with that school of philosophy, are correct in thinking that there is a collective unconscious and there are archetypes out there that people will use unconsciously to represent things, and I really like that. So I bought this and I took it home, and she's now on display on my bureau drawer, which is almost every flat surface in my house I transform into a personal altar, and that again is probably my part of my religious mania, my non-affiliated religious mania, generic religious mania. But I have on that particular bureau drawer an ivory dragon that was given to me by a dear friend when I left a job. And I used to do a show called The Dragon is Dancing, which is one of the reasons he gave it to me. I have some seashells that I found on a beach, a very magnificent beach in the wintertime. A couple of little knickknacks that my husband gave me. And I have a regular, quote-unquote, Madonna, little white Madonna in a blue cape, that came from my childhood somewhere. I think I got her because she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. I was in like a 5 and 10 or a junk store, which used to be in my neighborhood. And she's the kind of Madonna that had used to have a suction cup. The suction cup is long gone, that you'd just like plop her down on your dashboard and there she'd be. But that's gone. And I just have her, and she's very small. She's about 3 or 4 inches high. She stands in front of the larger, yet still small and petite and lovely black Madonna that I have, along with my collection of warrior dolls, my warrior women, which I'll tell you about someday, too. Anyway, it is 6:07 in the morning, and you are listening to Heresy, and a lot of people out there will think that definitely this morning, all this stuff I've been saying. My name is Sharon Griffiths, and this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. Now, I have a cultural and historical chapter or essay from a book called African Women in Antiquity, or The African Woman in Antiquity. I can't remember quite what it is. And it was edited by Ivan van Sertima. This chapter talks about Isis, the African / Egyptian goddess, and how she transmogrified into the Black Madonna of Europe. And it sort of reinforces my theory, or that's certainly not my theory, but I espouse the theory of the collective unconscious and the, well, Joseph Campbell has a philosophy of, or a thought that the planet, our world, this earth, has power spots on it, places of power. A lot of the New Age, again, the New Age spirituality, which has been co-opted from the Native Americans, talks about places of power. And I think that there certainly are, and Jerusalem is, and that area surrounding it is certainly a case in point. That's the cradle of religion, three religions, at least three, not talking about the anything earlier than Judaism or Islam, came from there. And one of the reasons that that's been put forth as to how the African Isis became the Black Madonna is that temples were built to Isis on these grids, these intersecting places of power. And as the old religions turned over to the new ones, those power places were still powerful. And other people knew that, so they would just take down the sign that said Temple of Isis, and they would put up the sign that said Christian Church, without really doing a lot of remodeling. So they would find statues of a woman seated, holding a child to her breast, and say, oh yeah, we got one of those. She's called Mary. Oh, but this one's black. Oh, that's fine. We'll just, you know, just, I don't want to carve a new one, so we'll just leave it there. I think people were a little more tolerant in those days, too, about those specific things. So that's a theory of how Isis became the Black Madonna. Also, in some versions of the biblical texts, Mary is called the seat or the throne of wisdom. And she's portrayed sitting, I would say, most of the time, unless she's being assumed into heaven. There she's standing up. But Isis was also a seated figure. You have to sort of sit down, or it's definitely more comfortable to sit down when you're breastfeeding a baby. So that's she was always portrayed as breastfeeding her son Horus. A quick little sketch. I don't think it's in here. Isis was in love with a god, Osiris. Osiris had a brother named Set. Set had red hair, and I think that sort of set the stage for many villains, both male and female, in the god and goddess hierarchy from then on. Any evil god or goddess has red hair. So Isis was in love with Osiris. Set was jealous. Set killed Osiris and scattered his body all over the earth. Isis was devastated. She gathered as much of Horus, as much of Osiris as she could find, leaving out one part she couldn't find. She gathered him together. She bathed him with her tears, and he became whole again just long enough to make love with her and to impregnate her with Horus, who's the baby that you always see her holding. So, that much said, let me read Danita Redd, R-E-D-D, Danita Redd's essay on the Black Madonnas of Europe, Diffusion of the African Isis, from The Black Woman in Antiquity, edited by Ivan van Sertima. This might even still be in print, but I'm not sure. Isis was an African goddess of Nile Valley civilizations whose worship eventually diffused to most of the ancient Western world. In early Ethiopia, Isis was one of the foremost widely venerated deities and was regarded, according to Diodorus Siculus, as the reason that the queen should have greater power and honor than the king. The ancient Greek scholar Plutarch wrote that Isis, daughter of the earth god Geb and the sky goddess Nut, was born on the fourth day after her brother husband Osiris, the elder Horus, not to be confused with the infant Horus, and the evil Set. Charles S. Finch brilliantly summarizes the roles and attributes of Isis. The second important deity in the Osirian drama is Isis, whose Egyptian name Ast means throne, seat, or abode. She is the greatest goddess of the Egyptian pantheon, the veritable Great Mother embodying all of the positive feminine attributes as gestator, bringer forth, nurturer, protector, and preserver. She is the virgin mother of Horus, the sister wife of Osiris, and the ideal of the true and faithful consort. She mourns Osiris and his death and seeks his dismembered body all over the land so that in the end she may gather it together and reinstill it with life. She is the goddess of the corn and grain, a lunar goddess, a star goddess identified with Sirius. In her lunar aspect, she is often pictured as the great cow, and in her stellar aspect, she is called the Queen of Heaven. The infant Horus was begotten of the resurrected god Osiris and the virgin goddess Isis. The virtuous Isis contributed to the civilizing of Egypt by teaching women to grind corn, weave cloth, and spin flax. To men, she taught the art of curing disease and, by instituting marriage, accustomed them to domestic life. Isis's influence pervaded heaven, earth, and the abode of the dead. She was recognized as a supreme miracle worker, skilled in the arts of magic. Legend persists of how Isis restored life to the dead, often by beating her majestic wings. She brought the infant Horus back to life after he was killed by a scorpion sting. The Theban Recension Book of the Dead recounts legends of her roles as an earthly intervener from the heavens, protectoress of the souls in the abode of the dead, and a divine granter of salvation for the souls of mankind. Egyptian artists pictured Isis in several symbolic poses. In some, she stands alone with her arms raised to the heavens. In others, she sits upon a throne suckling the infant Horus from her breast. Indeed, the throne was a major emblem associated with Isis in Egypt. In many pictures, she wears a throne-shaped headdress. Eventually, Isis assumed attributes of other Egyptian goddesses, most notably Hathor and Neith. As the forerunner to the East Indian legends of Maya and Buddha, of Devaki and Krishna, the legend of Isis became an ancient international phenomenon. Statues of the goddess Isis with the child Horus in her arms were common in Egypt and were exported to all neighboring and to many remote countries, where they are still to be found with new names attached to them, Christian in Europe, Buddhist in Turkestan, Taoist in China and Japan. Figures of the Virgin Isis do duty as representations of Mary, of Hariti, of Kuan Yin, of Kuan Yin, and of the other Virgin Mothers of Gods. I'm skipping some stuff here. As the cult of Isis spread into and throughout Europe, her associated emblems, majestic depictions, attributes, and titles, first identified in Africa, became well known. Though she maintained her African qualities and gained new qualities from the Greeks and Romans, her portrayals eventually took on the racial features common to the white inhabitants of her new domains. Europeanized depictions of Isis often displayed the hair in large ringlets. But even so, this style maintained its Egyptian influence, as evidenced in portrayals with the hair layered and tiered, or covered the upper forehead, reminiscent of hairstyles indigenous to ancient Egypt. The following eyewitness account served as the model for a later woodcut. Isis is crowned with a coil of hair, symbol of the moon's influence upon herbs and grasses. Wheat adorns her head, as a reminder that she was the discoverer of grain and taught us how to cultivate it. Her hair is drawn through a sphere which represents the world. This sphere rests on a garland of flowers, denoting her rule over the plant world. The rich headdress is completed by two snakes, signifying doubly the moon's generative powers and its sinuous path. Isis's flowing hair means that she is the nurturer of the whole world. In her left hand she holds the pail, symbol of the Nile floods. In her right, the sistrum, a jingling instrument sacred to her. Being the queen of the firmament, she wears a star-sewn mantle, the hem of which is decorated with flowers, symbolic of the soil. On her womb, she wears a half-moon. Her right foot is on the land, her left in the water. She presides over both elements. She is the Stella Maris, star of the sea, guardian of all that journey upon the ocean. And the ship, a feminine symbol, is consecrated to Isis. In Europe, Isis was also associated with the emblems of the lily, the ankh, ears of corn, globe, ship, crescent, and full moon. Images of Isis could also be identified by aspects of clothing. The mantle of Isis was brought over the shoulders to form a knot which hung below the breasts. Greeks and Romans of the ancient world usually associated the veil with feminine virginity, particularly in the virgin cults associated with the Roman goddess Vesta. In some statues and bas reliefs, when Isis appears alone, she is entirely veiled from head to foot, as a symbol of a mother's chastity. Great mystery was attached to the veil, which covered her head and upper forehead, as demonstrated by the carvings on the Sais statue. In some depictions, she wears a long hooded tunic, and like the veil, the hood is drawn over the head, covering the upper forehead. In Europe, Isis had maintained the attributes of protectress to those she loved, her devoted worshippers. As a virtuous, faithful, loving wife, her moral character was exemplary. The Greek and Roman goddesses displayed many of the emotional failings which mortals succumb to, but not the gentle and ever-maternal Isis. She was associated with the reappearance of Sirius in the morning sky, bringer of the Nile summer solstice flood. She was known as the Great Mother, the Tender Mother, personification of femininity, immaculate virgin to whom women prayed for forgiveness of sexual sins. Our Lady, the Queen of Heaven, Star of the Sea, and Mother of God were other titles associated with her. The cult of Isis, coexistent with nascent Christianity, Judaism, and assorted Roman religions. Initially, Christianity did not appeal to the European masses. This was partially due to the fact that nascent Christian doctrine lacked three main elements of mass appeal, elements that we take so much for granted now: resurrection, promise of a better afterlife, salvation of the soul. All of these can be found in African religions, particularly in the cult of Isis. The strongest rival to nascent Christianity in Europe came from the Isis cult, which provided the elements respectively listed: the resurrection myths associated with Osiris and Horus, the role of Isis as protectress of those in the abode of the dead, and the Isis incantations meant to save the souls of the deceased. Nascent Christianity had also to compete with another concept not developed in its early doctrine, the prominence of woman, the reverence given to womanhood in the cults of the goddesses. Nascent Christianity had a patriarchal flavor, as may be seen in the earliest artistic representations, which often featured Eve with Adam and the snake as the prominent female figure. The early Christians viewed Eve as the biblical character responsible for the downfall of man and his expulsion from the garden. The Virgin Mary was not a prominent image in nascent Christian art, and it took quite a while for her image to proliferate through European Christendom. The turning point for Christianity in Europe developed after the AD 313 declaration of the Religious Tolerance Edict of Milan by Constantine I. Christianity had gained official recognition in Europe. Emperor Constantine converted to the Christian faith and aided in the passage of laws favorable to Christianity. During the 5th century, there was great dissension in the European Christian churches concerning the doctrinal status of the Virgin Mary. In AD 428, Nestorius, Patriarch of Constantinople, put forth the claim that the Virgin Mary was mother to the divine Jesus Christ, differing from the strongest church faction which insisted that the Virgin Mary was the mother of God, as seen through the idea that Jesus was God reborn in earthly form. In AD 430, Cyril, Patriarch of Alexandria, called a synod which included the major Christian leaders of Europe. The AD 431 official declaration of the Virgin Mary as the Mother of God was the result of this synod, the Council of Ephesus. Cyril's faction of the Christian Church formed the European Orthodox Churches, which eventually separated into the Roman Catholic Church and the Eastern Orthodox Church. The absent Nestorius was ousted from the Constantinople Patriarchy, and his writings were burned as a result of the Council of Ephesus. Nascent Christianity now contained the elements for mass appeal. The Virgin Mary was elevated to a status equal to the status of Isis. European Christians appealed to God through the image of the Virgin Mary, who was recognized as a divine intervener. Many early Christians believed in the Immaculate Conception of the Virgin Mary. Though it did not become official church doctrine until the 19th century AD, the concept grew in popularity. The attributes and titles which catapulted the Virgin Mary into the realm of goddesshood were borrowed from the African Isis. Legends recounted her eternal devotion to her son and lifelong fidelity to God. An appellation, Mater Domina, used in association with the African Isis, survives in the form Madonna. Titles of the Virgin which include the Madonna, Queen of Heaven, Mother of God, the Great Mother, and Our Lady are the same titles attributed to the African Isis long before the existence of Christianity. Images of the Virgin Mary and Child proliferated after the Council of Ephesus. Cyril, major proponent for the elevation of the Virgin Mary, had spent the larger years of his life in Egypt. He was very familiar with representations of the African goddess Isis suckling Horus. This served as the prototype for the images of the Virgin Mary. It appears that if the first religious representations of the Virgin and Child were not a consequence of the Nestorian schism, yet consecration of such effigies as the visible form of a theological dogma to the purposes of worship and ecclesiastical decoration must date from the Council of Ephesus in AD 431, and their popularity and general diffusion throughout Western churches. Despite the official suppression of the worship of Isis in Europe, the African Isis maintained her pull on its citizens. This may be seen in the veneration of the European Black Madonnas, which are Orthodox Christian images of the Virgin Mary. All the Black Madonnas are powerful images. They are miracle workers, although not all miracle-working images are black. They are implored for intercession in the various problems of fertility. Pilgrimages covering hundreds of kilometers are made to these specific shrines. The degree of adorational fervor far exceeds that attached to other representations of the Virgin. For example, until the last decade when the practice was explicitly forbidden by church authorities, pilgrims journeying to the shrine at Mount Vergine would climb the steps of the church on their knees, licking each step with their tongues. We are thus equating the image of blackness with the image's power. The attitude of the pilgrim approaches not reverence, but worship. Many anthropologists attribute the blackness of the European Madonnas to their fertility quality, with black representing the earth. Another theory attributes the blackness to extreme age or smoke from candles, but no explanation is given why only the hands, face, and feet were affected. Unquestionably, all so-called black Madonnas are not actually black. The skin tones range in various shades of light brown to very black, the same variations seen in the skin pigmentation of people of African ancestry. The European black Madonnas demonstrate the diffusion of the African Isis into that continent. This diffusion can be investigated through the early development of Byzantine Christian iconography and the adoption by the European Orthodox Christians of various black goddesses to represent the Virgin Mary. The Byzantine-type black Madonnas were numerous in ancient Europe. Byzantium, ancient city of Thrace, existed on the site of present-day Istanbul, Turkey. The Greeks founded the site in 667 BC, and in AD 330, Constantine I chose the site for Constantinople, capital of the Roman Empire. After the AD 395 split of the Roman Empire into East and West, and the AD 476 fall of the Western Empire, Byzantium served as the capital for the succeeding Byzantine Empire. On modern maps, this site, Istanbul, is centered on both sides of the Bosphorus, the official dividing line between Europe and Asia. As an art style, the ancient Europeans considered Byzantine a synonym for lifeless stereotype. This art style was introduced into Europe by Greek artists fleeing Alexandria during the AD 640 Islamic onslaught. In Europe, Constantinople, later Istanbul, and Rome were major centers of the art style. But ancient Egypt gave birth to the Byzantine art style. The Greek and Roman Christians residing in Alexandria frequently borrowed images of the African Isis and Horus to serve as the Virgin Mary and child. These images of Isis and Horus also served as models for the early Byzantine-type pictures of the Virgin Mary and child. Basically, the Byzantine style is two-dimensional, rigid, flattened, and symmetrical. It is very similar to ancient Egyptian art, most noticeable in the bas-reliefs. Afrocentric art historian James Brunson mentions that the African influence on Byzantine art can be observed by the elongated faces, fingers, and figures of portrait images. The most notable examples of the Black Madonna in Byzantine-type art are in the form of icons. Icons are portable plaques which can be fixed at eye level, such as on a wall, for the purpose of veneration. To venerate an image this way means that the person is standing eye to eye with the Christian figure. The art of the icon had its origins in the Nile Valley homeland of Isis. In technique, these small portable portrait icons painted on wooden tablets with encaustic colors were derived from images which in late imperial times had been placed on the embalmed bodies of the dead of Egypt. A great number of these have been found, chiefly in the cemeteries of Fayum to the southwest of the Nile Delta. All these portraits make a startling impact with their directness and with the charged look of their dark eyes. The fact that most ancient portable icons have been discovered on Mount Sinai and that a few others from elsewhere show the same style and technique might seem to reinforce the belief that this kind of art had its origin in Egypt. Supposedly, the original Byzantine-type depiction of the Virgin Mary is attributed to the evangelist St. Luke. Accordingly, St. Luke was said to have painted on the top of a cedar table the first image of the Virgin Mary from life. Actually, there's no historical evidence that this evangelist had artistic talent, but in ancient Constantinople there lived a painter named Luke. Known as Holy Luke because of his pious nature, he spent most of his life painting pictures of the Virgin Mary. The confusion in names may have misled the early Christians to attribute Holy Luke's paintings to St. Luke. Accounts of these early portraits of the Virgin Mary mention that she was depicted with dark skin and Ethiopian facial features. Soon after the Council of Ephesus, a church of Constantinople received a supposed image of the Virgin Mary painted from life. According to Venetian legend, this original image is housed in the Venice Church of St. Mark, but the actual fate of the picture is not known. It is certain that this picture did exist at Constantinople and was so much venerated by the people as to be regarded as a sort of palladium and borne in a superb litter or car in the midst of the imperial host when the emperor led an army in person. The Byzantine style of iconography was introduced throughout Europe by Greek artists. During the 6th century AD, Greek artists in Russia introduced the technique to Eastern Europe. Under the tutelage of the Greeks, the Russians developed a style of iconography which has bequeathed to us some of the finest of the Black Madonnas. Unfortunately, very few of the early Byzantine-type Madonnas have survived over the centuries. A large number of them were destroyed during the iconoclasm, destruction of icons, which began during the 7th century. Emperor Leo the Isaurian and other leaders supporting the iconoclasm felt that the veneration of Christian icons had roots in the worship of pagan gods and goddesses. Pagan, in Latin, pagus, signifies villager, related to religio paganorum, the religion of the country people. After the iconoclasm, many icons, including those of the Black Madonnas, were reproduced or restored. During this period of restoration, many...